Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 24th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Norman, What's the Rush on Hogan Park?" by Stuart Doreen. District 2 Councilman John Norman told the Reporter Telegram that he has one question about the upcoming vote about the Hogan Park project. What's the rush? Norman said Monday the Midland City Council just got the latest version of the contract with the Permian Basin Quality of Life Conservancy on Wednesday. He said it was the latest back and forth of the deal between the City of Midland and the Conservancy. Norman added, "There are questions that need to be addressed, including about how the project has changed with the lower amount of money being raised, $30 million instead of $45 million." He was hoping for more time to let city staff look at the red line changes and then update city leaders in executive session. Norman's question about timing may be even more appropriate, because District 2 Councilman Jack Ladd stated it appeared a baby that he and his wife are expecting could come at any moment. Asking Ladd to make a Tuesday meeting might be a tall task. When asked on Monday if the vote would be postponed, Midland Mayor Lori Blong said via text, "I don't know yet." The vote appears to be headed to a split decision one way or another. Norman said Monday he will not be voting for the contract between the city and Conservancy if he is pushed to vote on Tuesday. Norman once played a role on the Quality of Place fundraising committee for Hogan Park. The saga that is the Hogan Park project is well chronicled. On Thursday, a Reporter Telegram article stated that the City of Midland put a vote on Tuesday's agenda regarding a development and lease agreement with the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy for the design, construction, maintenance, and operation of certain improvements having to do with the park in Northeast Midland. The agreement states that $10 million minus $5,884,848.22 that the city has already spent on improvements to the Bill Williams softball complex and has encumbered for design services for Hogan Park, will be provided to the Conservancy for development costs. It also states the city will provide an annual management fee equal to the lesser of $2 million or actual operating costs. The annual management fee can increase annually based on an index escalator not to exceed 1.035. Norman also stated he has questions about representation on the board that will oversee the park and why a conservancy deal is needed in the first place. "I don't think this is a good deal for the city," said Norman, whose district includes Hogan Park. "I believe the city can do the Hogan Park project itself." The Midland City Council meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. at Council Chamber inside City Hall. This article is entitled, "County Leaders Vote Down Tax Abatement for Wind Farm," by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court denied granting a tax abatement to Next Era for its wind farm on Pioneer Natural Resources land in southeast Midland County on Monday. All four commissioners voting on the matter voted denied granting the tax abatement. County Judge Terry Johnson abstained due to his personal business dealings with Pioneer. Next Era is developing the facility, a 141-megawatt facility comprised of 47 3-megawatt turbines. They will be placed on surface acreage Pioneer owns on the Hutt Ranch. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey said the lack of job creation and benefits for Midland County were his main reasons for voting against the abatement. Additionally, he stated that he was at a conference in Austin weeks ago, and the topic of tax abatement was discussed at length. Within the conversation, they'd use the words transformational and generational over and over again, he said. Ramsey added, Bexar County implemented a tax abatement for a Toyota plant, which Ramsey said is transformational and generational, given the amount of job creation and economic impact it generates. That's what this is for. When you get a tax abatement, it has to do something for this county. It needs to do something, not just today or 5 years from now. It needs to be a generational change, he said. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson cited a lack of energy benefits for Midland County residents. It's just one company that gets the benefits, and so I can't support it, she said. Luis Sanchez, Commissioner of Precinct 3, agreed with Ramsey and Anderson. I asked in the past in regard to this, how are county residents going to benefit from it? And there were no answers to that question. I'm concerned about that, he said. Sanchez continued to say that in the past, when the county granted tax abatements, they'd been in place for 5 years. The next era tax abatement would be for 10 years. I would like to see this maybe be brought up as a different idea, but yeah, 10 years is too much time. Benefits to the community, we have to make sure we keep that in mind, he said. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Somers said he couldn't support the project. It's a $175 to $200 million project, Somers said. I can't see how our portion of that project would affect the project. Although the tax abatement was denied, the reinvestment zone for the wind farm remains in place. Midland ISD previously had approved a tax limitation agreement. The agreement provides for an estimated $2,044,053 in M&O tax savings to Pioneer Hut Wind Energy, $615,149 in revenue protection payments to Midland ISD, $1,628,904 in total estimated net tax benefits under the 313 agreement, which are split 50-50 between Pioneer Hut Wind Energy and MISD, resulting in an additional $814,452 payment to MISD and $814,452 savings to Pioneer Hut. This article is entitled, County Leaders Vote for Johnson to Deal with Horseshoe Manager, by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved altering an amendment on Monday that gives County Judge Terry Johnson responsibility in dealing with Dooley Management Group, the company in charge of the Horseshoe Complex. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson placed the item on the agenda. The item changes language used in the public events management contract between Dooley and the county by replacing Commissioner's Court with County Judge. It just doesn't make any sense why the Chief Executive Officer of the county is replaced by the Commissioner's Court, when the Commissioner's Court can't take action on some simple matters without it having to meet as a group, Anderson said. She added, it would be easier to give Johnson sole responsibility of interactions with the management group, as deals between the two entities could be solved with a simple phone call or one-on-one meeting. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey said he was not keen on letting one person make decisions for the county. I was elected to represent Precinct 1. I have no desire whatsoever to give up any of my voice or their Precinct 1 constituents' voices, Ramsey said. Stuff like this, we need to have a voice. Your Anderson's people in Precinct 4 need to have that voice. All of us need to have a voice. I think it's very important to have those discussions. Johnson said none of the other commissioners can take away his power of preparing a budget for any department as the county judge. It is my budget. I present my budget. You as a court has a right to change it, Johnson said. If you don't like what I've moved, and there's been things you don't like, then change it. Johnson said Ramsey voted on contracts in the past that said the county judge will approve all contracts before they're signed. And this amendment does not take away other commissioners' ability to alter budget moves made by the judge. Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez said he understood Ramsey's point made regarding his precinct having a voice, but claimed if any commissioner takes issue with budget decisions Johnson makes, they can call attention to it. He agreed with Anderson that giving Johnson sole control of dealings with Dooley management will make the decision-making process easier. "I understand. I represent my precinct as well. But I know if I see something that's not working, that's not good for me, I can always bring it to court," Sanchez said. "And that's the opportunity you have to be able to voice your opinion for your constituents." Sanchez added that small, day-to-day decisions about the horseshoe won't include a commissioner's court meeting to decide if Johnson is able to make preliminary decisions himself. The motion passed 4-1, with Commissioner Ramsey opposing. This article is entitled, "Judge Counts Swears in Congressman August Pfluger," by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. U.S. District Judge David Counts administered the oath of office during a swearing-in ceremony for U.S. Representative August Pfluger on Monday in Midland. "It was an honor to swear an oath before God to support and defend the Constitution of the United States among all of you today at home in Texas, Congressional District 11," the San Angelo Republican said. "Thank you to U.S. District Judge David Counts for administering the oath, Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner for leading the prayer, Hector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths for leading the pledge, and for all of the elected officials and community members in attendance for their work on behalf of our region. I also want to say a special thank you to my incredible wife Camille and our three daughters for supporting me and enabling me to do this job. Representing the 11th District of Texas is the honor of a lifetime, and I am honored to continue serving you in my second term." The event took place at the George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush United States Courthouse and George Mahon Federal Building. This article is entitled, "DPS, Oklahoma Man Dies in a Collision on State Highway 349," by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. An Oklahoma man died Saturday morning after a collision on State Highway 349 south of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. The DPS reported that a 2008 Dodge Ram was traveling south on State Highway 349 inside Midland County when a 2004 Peterbilt with trailer failed to yield right-of-way from a private drive and entered State Highway 349, making a left turn northbound. DPS reported the traffic maneuver resulted in a collision which killed the driver of the Dodge Ram, Colton Allen Turner, 22, of Lexington, Oklahoma. DPS reported the accident took place around 7:32 a.m. and Turner was not wearing a seatbelt. The fatality is the fourth reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled, "County Leaders Approve Stop Signs, Speed Limit Changes," by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved the addition of stop signs and a speed limit reduction to area roads on Monday. Stop signs will be added to East County Road 130 and South County Road 1180 during the next few days, according to the county. The speed limit on East County Road 130 between State Highway 349 and Farm to Market Road 715 will be reduced from 45 to 35 miles per hour. This article is entitled, "Future of $6.4 million Garfield Street Utility Project to be Decided," by Stuart Doreen. The Garfield Street Reconstruction Project could clear a serious and expensive hurdle Tuesday. The Midland City Council will vote to approve a contract for the Garfield Street Utility Bond Project to Entrench, Inc. of Hobbs, New Mexico, for a total cost of $6.441 million. The utilities project is a precursor to the pavement reconstruction on one of Midland's major north-south corridors. The Road Bond website shows Garfield Street's rehabilitation is from Michigan Avenue to Golf Course Road, north of Midland Memorial Hospital. The City of Midland reported bid requests for this project were sent to 109 companies. Two responded, and Entrench Inc. was the low bidder. Entrench Inc. has an established history with the City of Midland of performing work of similar scale and scope to the Garfield Utility Bond Project, wrote Jose Ortiz, Engineering Services Director for the City of Midland. Furthermore, the unit prices appear to be in line with current pricing trends. Ortiz also noted that the agreement specifies a construction period of 365 calendar days, beginning within 15 calendar days of a written notice to proceed for construction. This article is entitled, Leaders Want New City Manager in Place by June, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland would like to have a new city manager in place by June 13th. On Tuesday, city leaders will vote to seek proposals from qualified firms to perform executive search services regarding the recruitment and selection of the city's next lead executive. It is the city's goal to complete the recruitment of the city manager by June 13th, an agenda packet document states. The document also states that the city would like to award a contract for an executive search firm by March 28th. Current city manager Robert Patrick is set to retire around April 28th. MDC discussions. The Midland City Council will talk about candidates to replace Stephen Lowry on the Midland Development Corporation Board. City leaders had the opportunity to vote on a person, but the large number of candidates caused them to delay a vote. On Tuesday, they will talk about potential candidates during executive session. Those who have submitted an application include Javier A. Torres, a Midland Health Director, Brian Stubbs, a Midland Chamber of Commerce Vice President, Jason Willman, a Realtor, Dara Richardson, a Superintendent of Wells, Lacey Sperry, Director of Communications for Endeavor Energy Resources, Danny Norwood, a Realtor, Zachary Deck, a Diamondback Energy Engineer and Planning and Zoning Commission member, Melissa Moser, a Human Resources Professional, John L. Kennedy, a former Midland ISD trustee and financial services professional, J. Brian Martin, a real estate attorney, Barrett J. Brannan, a land manager for Pioneer Natural Resources, James B. Griffiths, real estate developer, Abraham Beagle, a Midland Health Vice President and Planning and Zoning Commission member, Becca Heidelberg, a homemaker, Brennan Berry, a real estate investor, Daniel Garcia, purchasing supervisor, and John Elphick, commercial real estate developer, broker. This article is entitled, MFD, MPD are both seeking upgrades to their headquarters, by Stuart Doreen. Upgrades are needed to the headquarters of the Midland Police and Fire Departments. The Midland City Council will decide Tuesday to enter into an agreement with a Kingwood firm for architectural, design, and engineering services for the Central Fire Station Wellness Center and Police Department renovations. Agenda documents show a cost of $168,000 to be paid to Martinez Architects LP. MPD needs. Midland Police Chief Seth Herman, in an agenda packet document, reports the Midland Police Department / Computer Information Systems building has fallen into disrepair and is in desperate need of upgrading. Requested alterations and repairs include the following. The grounds surrounding the building and within the courtyard. New flooring, wall patching, ceiling tile replacement, and various other repairs for both functionality and aesthetics. The addition of two interview rooms within the Investigative Services Bureau, complete with audio and video recording systems. The men's and women's locker rooms need demolition and rebuilding due to aging pipes and hardware. The Computer Information Systems Division area requires installation of flooring and resurfacing of the server room. The basement/parking garage office occupied by CISD's radio technician needs upgrades. Fire Department Wellness Center. Fire Chief Charles Blumenauer reports that firefighters work out in the apparatus bay at the central fire station. This not only puts them out in the elements, but also exposes them to residential vehicle exhaust, Blumenauer wrote in an agenda packet letter. The new wellness center will enclose the courtyard at Central Fire and create a climate-controlled environment that will also remove the exposure to the carcinogens of the bay. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 24th. Janora Pruitt. August 5, 1927 to January 19, 2023. On Thursday, January 19, 2033, Janora Bell Burkholder Pruitt passed away peacefully at her son's home in Midland. Janora was born on August 5, 1927 in Barstow to John G. and Gladys M. Burkholder. Janora was preceded in death by her parents, John G. and Gladys M. Burkholder, and her husband, Neil H. Skeeter Pruitt, and her brother, Bob Burkholder. She is survived by her daughter, Laura Gay Glenn, Speedy, and her son, Paul Pruitt, Missy, as well as three grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Everyone is invited to celebrate Janora's life at memorial services to be held on Tuesday, January 24th at 10 a.m. at the Baptist Church in Barstow, with burial to follow at the Barstow Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to the West of the Pecos Museum or a charity of your choice. Howard Irwin Hayes. On Saturday, December 31st, Howard Irwin Hayes, loving husband, father, grandfather, and brother, passed peacefully away at the age of 79 in Midland. Howard was born on December 18, 1943, in Corpus Christi, to Jack Irwin Hayes and Rhea Von Seal Level Hayes. Howard is preceded in death by his father Jack Hayes and his mother Von Seal Hayes, his children's mother Donna Diane Thiel, and grandson Justin Nathan Price. His dear wife Frances Janet Harper Miller Hayes passed away peacefully on January 9th. He is survived by his son Michael and daughter Karen, four grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren, and his sister Jacqueline Hayes Lyles. Services for both Howard and Jan will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 28th at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations made in memory of Howard and Jan Hayes to Home Hospice Midland would be greatly appreciated. Jan Miller Hayes. Frances Janet Harper Miller Hayes was born July 14, 1943, in Abilene, to C.B. Harper and Thelma Frances Peyton Harper. She passed away January 9th in Midland. She married James Wendell Miller in August 1965, and they raised Jana, Craig, and Karen in Midland. After Wendell's passing, she married Howard Irwin Hayes in May 2017. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Wendell, her daughter Jana, and her husband Howard, who passed away December 31st. She is survived by her son-in-law, Tony Harrison, son Craig Miller, daughter-in-law Paula Miller, daughter-in-law Julie Laponius, daughter Karen Reber and husband Dean, her brother Bob Harper, sister-in-law Jacqueline Lyles, brother-in-law and sister-in-law Don and Lynette Miller, as well as many grandchildren and a host of dear friends. A memorial service for both Jan and Howard will be held at 10 a.m. January 28th at Christ Church Anglican in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations made in memory of Jan and Howard Hayes to Home Hospice of Midland will be greatly appreciated. Jeffrey Joe Durham. Jeffrey Joe Durham of Midland went to be home with his Lord and Savior on his birthday, January 19, 2023. Jeff was born to Dallas and Betty Durham on January 19, 1962, in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. He was 61 years old. Jeff is survived by his wife, Marilyn Durham, of 38 years, two sons, Cameron Durham of Waco and Benjamin Durham of Leveland, parents Dallas and the late Joyce Durham of Harrison, Tennessee, and Betty Durham of Georgia, one brother Lloyd Durham of Whitwell, Tennessee, and one sister Janice Sisk of Georgia. Viewing will be Tuesday, January 24th from 12 to 4 p.m., with family receiving friends from 5 to 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Wednesday at 10 a.m. at Kelview Heights Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Glenn Hale. Glenn Hale, 64, of Midland, passed away on January 17th. Services are pending with Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Mary Beth Nan Ingram. Mary Beth Nan Ingram, 88, passed away January 20th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 27th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 28th at Kelview Heights Baptist Church. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Peggy Sue Levine. Peggy Sue Levine of Midland passed away January 18th. Services are still pending and will be arranged by Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park. Stancil Gibbs. Stancil Bernard Gibbs, 57, of Midland, passed away on Friday, January 20th in Lubbock. Funeral service will be held on Tuesday, January 31st at 10 a.m. at Antioch Baptist Church, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 24th. Edgman calls out Hoven and his puppets. Crow fires back, a new day dawning in Odessa. Former Odessa Development Corporation board member Tim Edgman made a plea last week to all Odessans concerned about the future of the city. Get involved. We're going in the wrong direction, Edgman said. Now, 2 years into the terms of Mayor Javier Hoven and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata, Edgman said it has become obvious to him the three have an agenda and it's not one he can get behind. The new council people that were voted in 2 years ago, their whole plan, it's pretty obvious now, is they want control of everything, Edgman said. When City Council members Mary Willis, Deitra White, and Tom Sprawls opted not to run last November, and people didn't come forward to fill their seats, Edgman said Hoven, Swanner, and Motter were able to install puppets and tip the scales in their favor. Those puppets then turned around and changed the power dynamic on the ODC board, Edgman said. Hoven, Swanner, and Motter are working along with Ector County Republican Chairwoman Tisha Crow, her husband Chris Crow, and local businessman and Odessa Headlines publisher Jeff Russell to push their agenda, Edgman said. Shifting dynamics. Without Willis, White, and Sprawls, the city majority was able to terminate Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero, and City Attorney Natasha Brooks December 13th, Edgman said. Those terminations also allowed Hoven to sign a $338,000 contract with a consulting company without seeking input from the entire city council, Edgman said. He also suspects the terminations led to the resignations of most of the city's legal staff. Since Brooks's termination, three attorneys of the five attorneys left in the office have handed in their resignations. What they've done is like a dog chasing the car. When the dog finally catches the car, it doesn't know what to do. I think that's exactly what they've done, Edgman said. They've gone out and they wiped us out on the ODC. They've got the council, they've got 5 votes out of 7, but they have no idea how to accomplish what they want because they're firing people that you can't fire that way. They've made big mistakes. Edgman said Hoven should stop listening to the people who are bending his ear. I think if Javier is getting any information, he's getting it from the wrong people because everything he's done here lately has been wrong or back asswards, Edgman said. Crow scoffs at that idea. It should be very clear to anyone who has been paying attention that City Council speaks for themselves. The idea that the Crows or Jeff Russell are working to grab as much control as possible is absolutely ridiculous, Crow said. You will note that Mr. Edgman provides no details to back up his accusations, and a reasonable person would have to ask control of what or for what. No one has made any accusations that friends of his, Hoven, Mata, Swanner, or Russell, have received city contracts, tax abatements, or other incentives, Crow said. However, there have been such allegations made against current City Council member Steve Thompson and past council members and mayors, including Peggy Dean, David Turner, and Dewey Bryant, Crow said. Crow specifically cited the fact STA Benefits, which was owned by Thompson and is now owned by his son Marty, has been the city's insurance broker for 29 years without having to face other bidders. Looking at the facts, it seems pretty clear to me that the current council wants to take away any insider control over our city that has been in place for over 3 decades and return that control to the hardworking, tax-paying citizens of Odessa, Crow said. Take a quick look at the makeup of any city boards, committees, and chambers, the ODC, the OIDC, etc., from prior to 2 years ago. You will quickly notice the same names over and over again that all have deep ties to Mr. Edgman and his friends. Thompson has only been on the council for the last 2 years. Mata calls all of Edgman's allegations outlandish. One of the things I like to live by is stay in your lane. There's only so many things we can do. All of these outlandish accusations that are being made by that group that's probably benefited the most from the former appointees that we terminated, they're just outlandish. They should know. They've been in local government. They've been in these positions. They should know how the city council works, Mata said. He accused Edgman and his supporters of using the media to advance a false narrative. The reason they say this stuff is because they know that the Odessa American will pick up on it. They know that they're going to say, oh, this is a great story. This is going to hopefully sell some papers. They know that they know this stuff isn't true. But here we are addressing it because what? A small minority group of people seem to control this whole city. So whatever they say, it must be gospel, and it's just not the truth. Swanner is offended at the suggestion she's advancing anyone's agenda other than her constituents. How does that benefit any of us? I made $10 a meeting. How does that benefit the Crows or Russell? I know I was elected for my constituents and the taxpayer, and to look out for that. I'm not a rubber stamp. They use the word puppet a lot. I'm grown. I'm nobody's puppet. I mean, you can look at my voting record, my past voting record, and I'm not a puppet for anybody. Mata said the people accusing certain council members of being a rubber stamp should consider the voting records of past council members. The fact is, past council members did the exact same sort of things he, Swanner, and Hovind are now being accused of. We're the exact opposite of a rubber stamp. Those people are upset now because we're asking questions. We're questioning the status quo, so it's ruffling feathers, but that's what we're elected to do. We were elected in there to ask these tough questions. Now, does it make everybody happy? No, it doesn't make them happy. But we're not here to make a certain small group happy. We're here to make sure that the whole city of Odessa benefits from decisions made at city council. Mata again accused the Odessa American of playing favorites. There were never any mention of Councilwoman Willis, Councilwoman White, Councilman Sprawls, and Councilman Thompson ever being a voting block to what we wanted. They just skate free, but yet we go in and we have the majority now, and, oh my God, there's a voting block. Now they're going to destroy Odessa. The sky is falling, Mata said. ODC changes. Changes on the ODC board have Edgman worried about its future. On November 22nd, the day newly City Council member Chris Haney was sworn in, he replaced Edgman with Russell, who had been thrown off the ODC board by the old City Council. Russell, an active Republican Party member who once ran unsuccessfully for Ector County Commissioner, and Thompson have accused each other of voting on items despite having a conflict of interest. During the same November 22nd meeting, newly council member Greg Connell appointed Mickey Navarrete to replace board president David Bowton, who often voted with Edgman. However, Vasquez saved Bowton, and in order to do so, he had to sacrifice Chris Cole, who also frequently voted with Edgman, Bowton, and board member Melanie Hallman. Edgman, Bowton, and Cole's appointments weren't due to expire until December 2023. I figured that I would be replaced based on the dealings I have with that power group. I knew I would most likely be replaced, Edgman said. But what was the urgency? There was nothing coming out, ODC. That was urgent, but they took it upon themselves to immediately throw us off. Normally, when new council members are elected, Odessa City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo calls each of the outgoing council members' appointees to see if they are interested in staying on. That call never came this year, Edgman said. Why would they not just wait until the end of the year comes up, Edgman said. Crow said he was once replaced on the ODC board midterm. One meeting I was on the board, the next meeting I was gone, but I thought nothing about it as I served at the council's pleasure, he said, before going on to cite other examples. Swanner and Mata agreed with Crow. Changes happen, and that includes city staff. Although they declined to comment on Marrero's termination, citing pending litigation, they did say the average city manager only lasts 4 or 5 years. Marrero was promoted to city manager in 2018 after spending years as the assistant city manager. New city managers come in with fresh ideas, and stuff happens, you know. I'm not saying that's what's holding us back here. I can't really discuss anything else besides that because there is an ongoing investigation on that. But rest assured, the decision that we made on there, they're not easy decisions. They're not easy choices, but we feel that it's the right decision that we need to make sure that the city of Odessa grows and prospers and is heading in the right direction, Mata said. Sales tax revenue. Edgman suspects now that the power has shifted on the ODC board too. An attempt will be made by the city to regain control of the sales tax revenue now used to pay economic development incentives. After being kicked off the board last January, Russell said the OCD was in need of serious reform. He complained it hadn't done enough to diversify Odessa's economy. Russell cited instances in which incentives were given despite the fact the companies hadn't met their goals. Once he was gone, Crow took up the mantle. During one meeting, Crow told his fellow members that commingling ODC's assets with the city's seemed dangerous to him. Although he stressed he wasn't alleging any wrongdoing, he said he was only getting the financial information the city and the city's auditing firm, Weaver and Tidwell, wanted him to have. Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, who announced she was leaving 1 week after Marrero was fired, assured the board there are plenty of checks and balances in place and there are benefits to having the same firm conduct city and OCD audits, including familiarity with the books. Hallman, Cole, and Bouton expressed confidence in the status quo at the meeting, with Hallman saying the way things are done comports with industry standards. They agree they thought forcing the city to separate the books and audit would be erroneous. However, city staff sent out a request for proposals to various auditing firms in July, following up with phone calls and emails. Muncy said of the two companies that responded, only one company was qualified. The board voted to go out to bid a second time in November. Nacero, Edgman, and Bouton have also disagreed with Crow over Nacero, a $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility that is supposed to be built near Pinwell. Crow objected to Nacero receiving its first incentive payment in October because it only met 99.58% of its first benchmark goal, and that was only after taking into consideration investments made prior to the contract being signed. Edgman said he takes no issue with Crow and others wanting to review policies and procedures, but he doesn't think that's all they want to do. I think you got to go look at your past and not make the same mistakes. If you go back, we've got a 40% rate of return. We had some bonehead deals back before I was on there. We'd give them money up front, and there's no way to get that money back when they didn't do the job, Edgman said. Motives? But now that the power dynamics have changed on the city council and ODC board, Edgman thinks Hoven, Crow, Russell, and their supporters have their eyes on the sales tax revenue used to provide incentives to companies looking to relocate or expand in Odessa. The ODC was formed in 1997 when voters agreed one quarter of the 1 cent sales tax going to the Ector County Hospital District should be redirected toward economic development. They're trying to get full control over that. They're trying to get that quarter cent sales tax, Edgman said. Again, Crow scoffed at the idea. Mr. Edgman might want to take a quick look at the state law and the rules that surround the ODC's quarter percent sales tax, Crow said. If ODC were disbanded, it would take a vote of the citizens of Odessa to decide where that money goes. The mayor and the council would not have a say in the matter. What a novel idea, giving the citizens of Odessa a vote. This is completely contrary to past council actions of just issuing certificates of obligation as opposed to letting the public speak, isn't it? Swanner agreed with Crow. They give us so much credit as council. That's got to go to the voters. We can't take the ODC money away from them, and we're not trying to. I don't know where Mr. Edgman's coming up with that power-hungry statement, Swanner said. Crow says he believes the future of the ODC and Compliance Committee are stronger than they've ever been. As the Compliance Committee serves at the pleasure of the ODC Board, and as the ODC Board has changed recently, there could conceivably be future changes to the appointments of Compliance Committee, Crow said, adding they'll be looking more closely for any conflicts of interest. Recent terminations. As far as the terminations of Marrero and Brooks, Edgman said it's fine to fire people for cause, but he's not aware of any in this instance. You don't go and have an evaluation in October and everything's fine and then pull what they did. which screwed the whole thing up, and that's why we've got lawsuits, Edgman said. The people in Odessa, who are working in concert with Hoven, Crow, and Russell, are also meddling in Ector County Independent School District affairs, Edgman said, citing Facebook posts about ECISD's efforts to pass bonds for new and expanded school facilities. They want control, I think. Everyone you talk to says to get a hold of politics, you've got to start at the grassroots. Your city council and your school board, that's what you got to do, Edgman said. Crow said he can understand Edgman's angst over the new direction of Odessa. It is clear that the current council fully intends to root out corruption and to stop the millions of dollars in tax abatements, incentives, and other giveaways that have so freely flowed into the pockets of all of his friends. There is a new day dawning, Crow said. He is looking forward to the city getting back to basics and addressing the needs of the city and not the wants, Crow said. There needs to be a focus on priorities such as first responders, water and sewer systems, and roads, he said. Fancy Christmas trees in front of the Marriott and a goofy Gumby-looking statue in front of the police training facility that costs thousands of dollars are nice, but not before we have paid for our basic needs, Crow said. Mata said he is ready to move past the terminations to focus on the future and the things past council members ignored, such as the need for a sports complex, grocery stores on the south side, infrastructure improvements. Mata said last month, we had certain city leaders step up and talk about know-how. They've been a leader in this community for 25 years, 30-plus years, however long they've been a leader here, and even had some from the south side, my district, speak up and talk about that. My question is, why hasn't everything ever been done those times when they were the leaders in this community? Those city-owned land that is just sitting vacant, Mata said. Mata and Swanner said they're excited to start talking about the positive things going on, including the formation of a quality of life committee that will be looking into building a new sports complex. Lack of interest. Edgman bemoans the fact Haney, Connell, and Gilbert Vasquez, who voted against the firing of Marrero and Brooks, all ran unopposed. We need to get involved. Our community needs to get involved if you want to have a community. City council meetings need to be standing room only, so you know what's going on, Edgman said. Instead of hearing it from Odessa Accountability Project or hearing it from those different folks, hear it firsthand. Ector County Republican Women's Board member Teresa Edgman said, the council was full the other day when they had it, because that's reacting to something. We are needing to be proactive. You need to take time to go down there and listen to what's going on and see how it all works, Edgman said. Edgman said he continues to stand 100% behind Thompson, Hallman, and Bouton, and he's in the process of trying to convince people to run against Hoven, Swanner, and Mata in November 2024. We need to get the right people in the right positions, Edgman said. What we've got to do, my opinion, is we've got to go into damage control right now. They talk about a recall. I haven't heard anything about that, but I think we need to get involved and try to do as much damage control as we can. If you don't like the way it's gone, you've got to go out and vote someone else in. The future. Edgman said he believes Odessa should take a look at Midland and Lubbock for inspiration. Midland is using economic development money for parks and recreation, and Lubbock is building roads before developments. You can go back and blame all the past councils as you want to, and they've got to own up to most of it. Odessa has never been proactive, we're reactive. A prime example is you build a school out there on 87th Street, and you don't have the money to pave the road to get to the school. So you go back to all the people that are building out there, and you try to force it on them, Edgman said. You go up to Lubbock, you got a six-lane road going out in the middle of nowhere. That's the first thing that happens, and then within a year and a half, it's loaded up with developments. Because somebody wasn't looking ahead, city staff is now trying to make Loop 338 into an expressway, Edgman said. You can't do it. You've got homes, residential streets that come out to the loop. You can't put an overpass over everything, he said. City Council has busy Tuesday agenda. ARPA, sports complex, and firing municipal judge to be discussed. The Odessa City Council has a full agenda Tuesday. Among the items to be discussed, a sports complex, ARPA funds, a forensic audit, contracts with the acting city attorney and city manager, and the potential termination of Odessa Municipal Court presiding judge Carlos Rodriguez. Last month, the council agreed they wanted to start holding its work session on the same day as its regular meeting. Tuesday will be the first time they'll be doing so. The agendas for each are separate, however, because the first work session of every month will address items scheduled to be discussed during the second council meeting of the month. During this week's work session, Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton is scheduled to discuss the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board's recommendation to pursue the development of a sports complex. Mayor Javier Hoven announced during a recent Coffee with the Mayor event the formation of a quality of life committee that will look into such a complex and other pressing issues such as infrastructure. Seth Bowles from the city's finance department will also update the council on the rules and usage of American Rescue Plan Act money. Hoven also recently announced he'd like the city to be forensically audited by an outside firm. The council is expected to sell city staff the scope of the work they want done so they can issue a request for a proposal. During the city's regular meeting, they will consider signing contracts with Agapito Bernal and Dan Jones, who were appointed interim city manager and city attorney December 13th, following the terminations of Michael Marrero and Natasha Brooks. According to city documents, the council is considering paying Bernal $3,846.15 per week and a $600 per month car allowance. They will consider paying Jones $3,269.23 per week and the same car allowance. Marrero earned $238,000 annually and had a $950 a month car allowance. Brooks earned $184,500 annually and had a $750 a month car allowance. The council is also scheduled to discuss in executive session the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of Rodriguez. Secondly, they are to discuss opening up his position and accepting applications for it. Like Marrero and Brooks, Rodriguez was evaluated in executive session in October and no action was taken following the meeting. Rodriguez graduated from Odessa High School and the University of Texas. He received his law degree from St. Mary's University of Law in San Antonio in 2013 and joined the court as the associate judge in July 2020. According to the State Bar of Texas, he has no public disciplinary history. Since Brooks was fired December 13th, three of the city's five other attorneys have left the city. Assistant City Attorney Lori Means, who announced January 6th she had accepted employment elsewhere, Senior Assistant City Attorney Monique Wimberly resigned January 13th, citing the disintegration of work environment, political process became too intertwined with position, and another Senior Assistant City Attorney, Jan Baker, said January 17th she was ready to retire. The city's legal department, which is budgeted for seven attorneys, was already short one attorney. They never filled the position of Senior Assistant City Attorney Robert Carroll, who died at the age of 34 in January 2021.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.